Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, December 23rd. Christmas to bring record high temperatures. National Weather Service says this month on pace to be warmest December in city's history. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The National Weather Service is predicting record high temperatures for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day in Midland. The National Weather Service is calling for high temperatures of 83 degrees on Friday and 80 degrees on Saturday. Both would set new records for December 24th and December 25th, respectively. The National Weather Service shows a record high of 82 degrees set in 1955 for December 24th, while the record high for December 25th is 78 degrees, also set in 1955. The normal high temperature for December 24th and December 25th is 57 degrees. The National Weather Service also shows low temperatures that are more than 20 degrees above normal for the dates 30 degrees. The low on Christmas Eve is expected to fall to 54 degrees, while the low on Christmas Day will drop to 51. The National Weather Service reported Wednesday that this December is on pace to be the warmest in Midland's history. The average temperature of 54 degrees through Tuesday is 6.9 degrees above normal and more than 3 degrees above the current record, 50.7 degrees, set in 1970. Check out what's open on Christmas. The story was written by J.C. Lewis. The following are restaurants that will be open during Christmas Day around Midland. MD Pizza will open starting at 3 p.m. and will be open until selling out of pizzas. The restaurant is located at 4706 North Midkiff Road, Suite 13. Saltgrass will be open Christmas Day with featured dish Gulf Coast Steak and Shrimp, a center-cut top sirloin with grilled or fried shrimp. Midland's location will be open from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. MCM Grande Hotel will have Christmas Day brunch from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The menu features prime rib, ham, turkey, fixins, menudo, a Mexican buffet, and dessert. Sumo Sushi and Hibachi will be open from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. at 4706 North Midkiff Road. Starbucks at 4101 North Big Spring Street and 4000 North Midland Drive will be open 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Christmas Day. IHOP will be open 24 hours on Christmas Day. The restaurant has new Winter Wonderland pancakes, frozen hot chocolate milkshake, and calor-roasted turkey melt. Denny's will be open for 24 hours during Christmas Day at 3701 West Wall Avenue. Jack in the Box locations will be open for 24 hours on Christmas Day. The Bites. Pride Center, West Texas, will be hosting a hangover holiday drag brunch from 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday at the Beer Garden. The drag brunch will feature Showtime, Chloe Canella, and Nicole Roulette. Tickets are $30 and available at www.eventbrite.com. Seance's next dinner will be January 24th at Kessler Hall. Tickets will be available for purchase on their website now at www.seancemtx.com. 30 seats are available for purchase. Opal's Table and the basement owner, Chip Height, announced a new restaurant endeavor on Instagram earlier this week. Mr. Chip's Kitchen is set to come to Midland in early 2022 at 607 North Colorado Street. The restaurant will feature Asian dishes and more. Odessa man faces multiple charges for participation in airport brawl. The story was written by David Fisher of the Associated Press. Two travelers are facing charges following a brawl with police at Miami International Airport, authorities said. Mayfair Serena Paca, age 30, of Kissimmee, Florida, and Alberto Yanez Suarez, age 32, of Odessa, were arrested in Concourse H following Monday evening's flight, according to Miami-Dade police reports. They were each charged with battery on a law enforcement officer and resisting arrest, while Serrano Paca also faces six additional counts that include burglary and inciting a riot. MIA Director and CEO Ralph Cutie said in a statement that the airport is experiencing record-high passenger numbers this winter travel season. Quote, "Unfortunately, that passenger growth has come with a record-high increase nationwide in bad behavior as well, such as the incident this evening at MIA," Cutie said. Quote, "Disruptive passengers face police arrest, civil penalties up to $37,000, being banned from flying, and potential federal prosecution," end quote. Monday's confrontation, which was captured on video by another traveler, began when Serrano Paca hopped onto a cart driven by an airport employee and refused to move until the worker gave him information about his delayed flight, according to the arrest report. The employee said he didn't work for the airline and didn't have any information about the flight. The worker eventually called for airport police. Two officers responded and tried to calm Serrano Paca, police said. Serrano Paca attempted to incite the nearby crowd and began to fight with the officers, biting one of them on the head, authorities said. At one point, an officer broke free of the struggle and drew his firearm, though no shots were fired, police said. As additional officers arrived and attempted to take Serrano Paca into custody, officials say Yanez Suarez intervened and attempted to pull the police off of Serrano Paca, prompting officers to arrest him as well. Miami-Dade Fire Rescue treated Serrano Paca and the bitten officer at the scene, officials said. Serrano Paca was being held on $29,500 bond, and Yanez Suarez was later freed on $15,000 bond. A defense attorney for Serrano Paca didn't immediately respond to a message seeking comment from the Associated Press. Court and jail records did not list an attorney for Yanez Suarez.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read the inside pages from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Thursday, December 23rd. Odessa PAC aims to combat misinformation, by J.C. Lewis. A nonpartisan political action committee has launched in Ector County to combat misinformation. The Odessans for Ethical Leadership, OELs, website is now live at theoel.org. The PAC also has a Facebook page at Odessans for Ethical Leadership, designed to help residents of Odessa and Ector County make informed decisions at the polls, according to a new release. The OEF was conceived after two election cycles and intends to combat misinformation and alternative facts when it comes to future elections and issues that will directly impact the economic prosperity of the community, including health care, education, infrastructure, and quality of life, according to the news release. The mission of the OEL is to work to identify and support leaders and causes focused on advancing positive opportunities in Odessa and Ector County. The OEL will seek out and support leaders of the highest integrity, according to the release. The PAC will identify leaders who know what makes the community special and who are motivated to guide the area forward. According to the press release, the OEL will operate according to these principles: endeavor to act with the highest integrity and put the needs of the community first. Endeavor to build trust and credibility within the community. Endeavor to encourage positive growth. Endeavor to act with truth and transparency. Endeavor to prioritize progress, not politics or party affiliation. Believe that ethical local government is necessary for a thriving community. Former City Councilman Dewey Bryant is the spokesperson for Odessans for Ethical Leadership. He said in a statement, OEL will support leaders who champion the well-being of our community and act with the highest integrity. You are invited to join OEL and to help educate our citizens with the correct information and facts on issues affecting each one of us within this great community. Together, we can make an impact on our economic prosperity, healthcare, education, infrastructure, and quality of life for everyone in the city of Odessa and Ector County.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, December 23rd, 2021. Community. Wagner Knoll announces new shows for 22 season by J.C. Lewis. The Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center announced that 20 shows went on sale in the last 40 days for the 2022 season. The Performing Arts Center is anticipating closing out its 10-year anniversary with legendary performances. To buy tickets for upcoming shows, visit https://www.wagnerknoll.com/events. Upcoming events. Rodney Carrington, Let Me In, January 6th. Joe Coy, Funny is Funny World Tour, January 8th. Cinema Under the Stars, Mamma Mia, January 13th. George Lopez, OMG High Comedy Tour, January 22nd. Tom Segura, I'm Coming Everywhere, January 26th. Cody Jinks, January 28th and January 29th. Trey Kennedy, The Are You For Real? February 2nd. MOSC Masterworks, Friends of the Symphony, February 5th. Beautiful, The Carole King Musical, February 7th. Live Nation presents Dr. Jordan B. Peterson, February 8th. Disney Princess the Concert, February 9th. Chad Prather, February 11th. Kansas, February 12th. Amanda Miguel y Diego Verdaguer, February 13th. The Mavericks, February 15th. Gaither Music Group, February 19th. Let's Rock Broadway, February 21st. Ron White, February 25th. Dinosaur World Live, March 1st. Toto, Dogs of Oz, March 2nd. The Simon and Garfunkel Story, March 4th. That Golden Girls Show, A Puppet Parody, March 8th. REO Speedwagon, March 11th. Newsboys Stand Together, March 12th. Daniel Habif, March 16th. MOSC Pops, A Texas Tribute, March 19th. Baby Shark Live, March 23rd. Whiskey Myers with Drake White, March 26th. Black Market Trust, April 5th. MOSC Masterworks Tchaikovsky 4, April 9th. Foreigner, April 20th. The Bachelor Live on Stage official tour, April 22nd. Rain, a tribute to the Beatles, April 24th. In more news, the box office will be closed until December 27th and again on December 31st. Starting January 1st, the Performing Arts Center will implement a clear bag policy for all events. Jimmy Buffett tickets will go on sale in January 2022.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, December 23rd. Hazel Adele Reitley passed away early Sunday morning, December 19th. She was born on October 3rd, 1924, to Theodore Joseph and Mary Leona Portell in Marlin, Texas. Hazel's family moved to Houston when she was a child. She attended business school and went to work for the Texas Company for several years. She met Vernon Reitley at a Catholic Youth Organization dance. The family moved to Midland in 1959 when Vernon was transferred with Humble Oil and Refining Company. Upon arrival in Midland, the family joined St. Anne's Catholic Church and have been members ever since. Miss Reitley was preceded in death by her husband Vernon, two sons, Michael and Kevin, and her daughter-in-law, Brenda Pearson Reitley. Hazel is survived by four of her children, Patricia Reitley Epley, Greg, Karen, and husband Monty McLean, daughter-in-law, Belle Reitley, Scott, and 10 grandchildren, and 11 great-grandchildren. Visitation was held on Wednesday, December 22nd, at Ellis Funeral Home, with a rosary following. Funeral Mass will be Thursday at 1 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church, with burial following at Rest Haven Cemetery. The family suggests donations go to Helping Hands of Midland. Professional services conducted by Ellis Funeral Home. Alfredo Salazar Zertucci, age 88, of Eagle Pass, Texas, passed away on Monday, December 20th. Viewing will be Thursday, December 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary beginning at 7 p.m. that evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, December 24th, at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. He is survived by his wife, Maria del Rosario Zertucci of Eagle Pass, Texas, three sons, Jose Alfredo Zertucci, Javier Zertucci of Midland, and Rolando Zertucci of South Padre Island, Texas, one brother and two sisters. Ann Rico, age 60, passed away December 21st. Arrangements are pending with Gerdner Funeral Home in Abilene. Evelyn Sue Moody Harmon, age 98, of Midland, passed away on December 16th. She was born in Dawson, Texas, to Mary Elizabeth Moody and John Nelson Moody on November 13th of 1923. She is survived by her daughter, Michelle Harmon, and her son-in-law, Joe P. Cobb, Jr. The family requests that memorial donations be given to West Texas Fix. No services are planned at this time. Miguel Angel Therese, age 21, of Midland, passed away December 20th. Funeral services will be held at Jackie Warren Funeral Home Chapel on Thursday, December 23rd at 11 a.m., with interment following at Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton. Services are under the direction of Jackie Warren.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Thursday, December 23rd. Pause on student loan payments is extended through May 1st. The Associated Press, Washington. The Biden administration on Wednesday extended a student loan moratorium that has allowed tens of millions of Americans to put off debt payments during the pandemic. Under the action, payments on federal student loans will remain paused through May 1st. Interest rates will remain at 0% during that period, and debt collection efforts will be suspended. Those measures have been in place since early in the pandemic, but were set to expire January 31st. President Joe Biden said financial recovery from the pandemic will take longer than job recovery, especially for those with student loans. We know that millions of student loan borrowers are still coping with the impacts of the pandemic and need some more time before resuming payments, he said in a statement, adding it was an issue he and the vice president both care deeply about. The Omicron variant of COVID-19 that has swept through the U.S. with a fury has lent a new urgency to the question over whether the moratorium would be extended. Administration officials had initially said they expected the January extension to be the last. But even as the economy improves, there are concerns that borrowers are not ready to start payments again. Once the moratorium ends, those who are already behind on payments could have wages and benefits taken away as part of debt collection efforts. The policy applies to more than 36 million Americans who have student loans that are held by the federal government. Their collective debt totals more than $1.37 trillion, according to the latest Education Department data. About a third of borrowers are in default of delinquency, and in the average monthly payment is $400 a month. Officials said the pause also helps about 5 million other borrowers currently in school who are not yet paying back loans but are accruing interest. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona said in a statement that the extension will allow for repayment plans responsive to the financial needs of the students, including an income-driven repayment plan. The continued pause will provide critical relief to borrowers who continue to face financial hardships as a result of the pandemic and will allow our administration to assess the impacts of Omicron on student borrowers, Cardona said. The Trump administration initially suspended federal student loan payments in March 2020 and later extended it through January 2021. Biden has now moved to continue it twice, and the Education Department raised concerns about the effects of suddenly restarting payments, both for students and administratively within the department. The extension of the loan moratorium comes as decision whether to erase large swaths of student debt altogether is still on the table. Some Democrats are pushing for mass forgiveness of debt, but Biden has questioned whether he has the authority for that kind of mass cancellation, and legal scholars differ on that. Earlier this year, Biden asked the Education and Justice Departments to study the issue. Officials have said that work is still underway. Biden has previously said he supports canceling up to $10,000 in student debt, but he has argued it should be done by Congress. The extension was met with relief by student advocates who pushed for a more permanent solution. "We can finally take a breath knowing that student loan payments will be paused again," said Wisdom Cole, NAACP, Youth and College National Director. "But true relief would only come with a cancellation of student loan debt," Cole said. "To provide financial relief during Omicron, cancel student debt," he said. "To boost the economy, cancel student debt. To address the racial wealth gap, cancel student debt." Meanwhile, in October, the administration relaxed the rules for the student loan forgiveness program it has in place already, ditching some of the toughest requirements around the program that was launched in 2007 to steer more college graduates into public service. Biden said that he was also asking all student loan borrowers to do their part as well. He said they should take full advantage of Education Department resources as they prepare for payments to resume, look at options to lower payments through income-based repayment plans, and explore public service loan forgiveness, and make sure you are vaccinated and boosted when eligible. COVID-19 news by the numbers, COVID in the basin. Ector County, 27,696 total cases, 565 deaths. Midland County, 30,040 total cases, 404 deaths. Texas, 4,453,516 total cases, 75,156 deaths. U.S. cases, 51,324,667 total confirmed and 807,397 deaths. Quick hits. 6th Annual Live Nativity, 2nd Baptist Church, 711 East 17th Street, has scheduled the 66th Annual Live Nativity from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. today and from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday. Christmas music performances on air. The West Texas A&M University School of Music will air Christmas music performances at midnight today, 8 p.m. Friday, and 1 a.m. Sunday on Panhandle PBS. Conductors are Pullen and Brandon Farron of Canyon High. For more information, visit WTAMU.edu. Holiday closures. The Odessa American Business Office will be closed Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, Friday and Saturday. However, customer service will be open from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Call 432-337-7314 or 888-693-7191. The City of Office will be closed Friday and Monday for the Christmas holiday. Trash will not be picked up on Friday. Customers will roll out carts. Normal service on Friday. Can expect service today. Residential rollout carts and brown dumpsters will be serviced as scheduled Monday. Residential brown dumpsters will be serviced once. Apartments and commercials will be serviced twice. The household hazardous waste facility will be closed Friday and Monday. Residential rollout carts and brown dumpsters will be serviced as scheduled Monday. To avoid an overflowing accumulation of trash and debris in dumpsters, citizens are asked to recycle items at the Odessa Recycle Center. 816 West 42nd Street. Drop-off window for cardboard, plastics, paper, aluminum, and tin cans are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Trash and debris and bulky items piled to the alley dumpsters is illegal and prevents the solid waste trucks from being able to pick up the containers when service resumes. During the holiday period, city trash receptacles should be serviced for perishable items only. For more information, call Martha Cortazar at 432-335-4836 or visit odessa-tx.gov/492/recycling-center. Christmas Eve services. Emmanuel Baptist Church, 4020 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Christmas Eve worship from 2:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Friday. Call 366-4439. Mid-Cities Church, 8700 Texas 191 Midland, has scheduled a Christmas Eve services with candlelight worship at 3:30 p.m., 5 p.m., and 6 p.m. Friday. There will be Christmas carols, communion, holiday treats, and more. Community Bible Church, 1603 North Grandview Avenue, has scheduled a Christmas Eve service from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Friday. There will be carols, cocoa, and candlelight. Odessa Christian Faith Center, 8860 Andrews Highway, has scheduled its annual Christmas Eve celebration, The Story of Love, from 4:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. The Fine Arts Ministry will present an original drama with classic favorite Christmas songs. This is an event that is fun for the entire family. Admission is free. For more information, call 432-368-7714. First Baptist Church, 311 West 8th Street, has scheduled a Christmas Eve service at 6 p.m. Friday. There will be hot chocolate and cookies starting at 5 p.m. Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane, has scheduled a Christmas Eve worship service from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday. There will be carols, communion, and candlelight. Mission Dorado Baptist Church, 4142 Faudry Road, has scheduled the annual Christmas Eve candlelight service at 5:30 p.m. Friday. Hot cider and cookies will be offered after the service. New Dawn Fellowship Church, 2110 East 10th Street, has scheduled a Christmas Eve candlelight service at 6 p.m. Friday. Listen to the true story of his birth long ago and hear of the hope that Jesus' life, death, and resurrection bring to us. We'll sing familiar Christmas carols together as we hold our brightly lit candles high, reflecting the light of Jesus throughout the world. Visit newdawnfellowship.com. Man and woman charged with sexually assaulting intoxicated 19-year-old. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed a 47-year-old man and a 33-year-old woman is accused of sexually assaulting an intoxicated 19-year-old woman. Domingo Hernandez, 47, and Kimberly Ayala, 33, were each charged with sexual assault, a second-degree felony. The report details that the sexual assault happened 3:25 a.m. December 19th in the 200 block of South Tom Green Avenue. Officers say they made contact with a 19-year-old woman who reported she had been drinking at a social gathering with her boyfriend when they left the original location to another part of a hotel. While at the hotel, the 19-year-old got into an argument with her boyfriend when Hernandez and Ayala intervened. The 19-year-old was offered a ride from Hernandez and Ayala to a secure place for the night. The 19-year-old told police she couldn't access money from an ATM and was offered by the couple to stay the night at their residence. The 19-year-old reported she blacked out during the drive to their residence and woke up to Hernandez sexually assaulting her against her knowledge and consent. The 19-year-old told Hernandez to stop, but Hernandez didn't. The affidavit details the 19-year-old was able to get away by reporting she was going to throw up on Hernandez. The 19-year-old gathered a wad of clothing that was on the floor that she believed to be her clothing. The 19-year-old stated she was able to flee the trailer and went down the street calling the police. The 19-year-old pointed out the residence where she was sexually assaulted to officers, and she told police that some of her clothing was still in the residence. The 19-year-old was transported to Medical Center Hospital for a SANE exam and was identified to have markings on her neck of scratches consistent with her claim of being choked. The 19-year-old also reported Hernandez bit her on the shoulder. Hernandez was detained and provided his Miranda warning, which he waived, and verbally admitted that the 19-year-old woman was met at the escape lounge after being in a verbal physical altercation with her husband. Hernandez and Ayala intervened and eventually provided the intoxicated 19-year-old woman a ride. Hernandez told police the 19-year-old vomited on herself during the vehicle ride. When they arrived at the residence, Hernandez stated the 19-year-old showered and then had sexual intercourse. Ayala stated Hernandez had sex with both her and the 19-year-old woman. The 19-year-old reported during the SANE exam that Ayala bit her. The 19-year-old also stated the sexual intercourse with Hernandez and Ayala was without consent. Hernandez and Ayala were each booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on December 19th. Ayala had one bond totaling $40,000, and she posted bail on December 20th. Hernandez had one bond totaling $40,000 and was still in custody as of Wednesday morning. Man charged with choking girlfriend. A 25-year-old man was arrested after police say he choked his girlfriend. Anthony Menjarez was charged with assault by impeding breath or circulation, a third-degree felony. The reported assault happened at 5:30 a.m. December 19th at the Cielo Vista Townhomes, located at 2320 East 21st Street. Officers made contact with the victim, identified as Bailey Perales, who had red marks on and around her lips. Perales also had a red scratch and red marks on the right side of her neck, as well as a red mark on the left side of her neck. Perales stated an argument started between her and her boyfriend, Menjarez. The argument turned physical when Menjarez pinned Perales against the bedroom wall and placed his hand on the front of her neck. Menjarez squeezed Perales' neck to the extent where she was unable to breathe. Menjarez was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on December 19th. He has one bond totaling $15,000 and was still in custody as of Wednesday morning. Omicron less likely to put you in the hospital, studies say, the Associated Press. Two new British studies provide some early hints that the Omicron variant of the coronavirus may be milder than the Delta variant. Scientists stress that even if the findings of these early studies hold up, any reductions in severity need to be weighed against the fact Omicron spreads much faster than Delta and is more able to evade vaccines. Sheer numbers of infections could still overwhelm hospitals. Still, the new studies released Wednesday seem to bolster earlier research that suggests Omicron may not be as harmful as the Delta variant, said Manuel Ascano Jr., a Vanderbilt biochemist who studies viruses. Cautious optimism is perhaps the best way to look at this, he said. An analysis from the Imperial College London COVID-19 response team estimated hospitalization risks for Omicron cases in England, finding people infected with the variant are around 20% less likely to go to the hospital at all than those infected with the Delta variant, and 40% likely to be hospitalized for a night or more. That analysis included all cases of COVID-19 confirmed by PCR tests in England in the first half of December, in which the variant could be identified. 56,000 cases of Omicron and 269,000 cases of Delta. A separate study out of Scotland by scientists at the University of Edinburgh and other experts suggested the risk of hospitalization was two-thirds less with Omicron than Delta. But that study pointed out that the nearly 24,000 Omicron cases in Scotland were predominantly among younger adults ages 20 to 39. Young people are much less likely to develop severe cases of COVID-19. This national investigation is one of the first to show that Omicron is less likely to result in COVID-19 hospitalization than Delta, researchers wrote. While the findings are early observations, they are encouraging, the authors wrote. The findings have not yet been reviewed by other experts, the gold standard in scientific research. Ascano noted the studies have limitations. For example, the findings are specific to a certain point in time during a quickly changing situation in the United Kingdom, and other countries may not fare the same way. Matthew Binneker, director of clinical virology at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, said that in the Scottish study, the percentage of younger people was almost twice as high for the Omicron group compared with a Delta group, and that could have biased the conclusions to less severe outcomes caused by Omicron. California says healthcare workers must get booster shots. The Associated Press. California healthcare workers will be required to have coronavirus booster shots to ensure that hospitals are ready to deal with a surge in cases as the more transmissible Omicron variant spreads throughout the state. Governor Gavin Newsom announced the order Tuesday on his personal Twitter account and planned to provide more details at a Wednesday news conference. California already requires healthcare workers to be vaccinated against the coronavirus, a directive that took effect in September and has since led to the firing or suspension of thousands of people. Now it will join New Mexico as at least the second state to require booster shots for healthcare workers. Last week, Newsom, who imposed the first statewide shutdown order in March 2020, warned that cases would likely rise and reimposed a rule requiring everyone to wear masks at public indoor gatherings. Concerns stem from the rise of Omicron, which as of Monday was the dominant variant of the coronavirus in the United States. Areas in the Midwest and Northeast are seeing the biggest jump in cases and hospitalizations amid frigid temperatures that have kept people indoors. Much about the variant remains unknown, including whether it causes more or less severe illness. Scientists say Omicron spreads more easily than other coronavirus strains, including Delta. Early studies suggest the vaccinated will need a third shot for the best chance of preventing infection, but even without the extra dose, vaccination still should offer strong protection against severe illness and death. Obituary and death notices from the Odessa American for Thursday. Frances Ann Rice passed away from this life at the age of 104 years young on Friday, December 17th, at her residence in Liberal, Kansas. She was born on April 27, 1917, in Sherman, Texas, to William and Bertha Grammer Taylor. She is survived by a son, David Rice, and wife, Jerry, 7 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, and 18 great-great-grandchildren, and a host of nieces and nephews. Brothers are Donald and Corrine Taylor and William Taylor. Sisters are LaWanda and Bill Duckworth and Marilyn and Jim Mitchell. Sisters-in-law are Iris Taylor and Bonnie Taylor. Preceded in death by her husband David Alvin Rice, her parents and stepmother Mandy Blankenship Taylor. Her daughters Shirley Pocorny and son-in-law John Pocorny. Also infant grandson John David Rice. 7 brothers, 2 were infants, Lehman, Edmund, Archie, Leon, and Kenneth. 6 sisters, Gertie, Thelma, Richie, Mayhew, Fern, and Ida. Funeral services will be at 12 p.m. Thursday, December 23rd, at the Parkview Church of Christ in Odessa, with Danny Wilson presiding. Burial to follow at the Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Bonnie K. Rawling Kittredge, 72, of Monahans, died Thursday, December 16th in Monahans. Funeral service was held December 20th at First Baptist Church, with burial following at Monahans Memorial Cemetery. Arrangements were by Harkey Funeral Home of Monahans. Geraldine Cherry Roge, capital R-O-G-G-E, 88, of Amarillo, died Tuesday, December 21st in Amarillo. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. December 27th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Brooks Funeral Directors of Canyon. Sheila Faye Thompson, 69, of Odessa, died Monday, December 20th in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. December 23rd at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Memorial service to follow at First Baptist Church at 2 p.m. Pastors Charles Osborne and Curtis Brewer are officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Virus fears trigger more holiday cancellations, restrictions. Boston, the nation's second largest city, called off its New Year's Eve celebration Monday, and its smallest state reimposed an indoor mask mandate as fears of a potentially devastating winter COVID-19 surge triggered more cancellations and restrictions ahead of the holidays. Organizers of the New Year's Eve party planned for downtown Los Angeles, Grand Park, said there will not be an in-person audience. The event will be live-streamed instead, as it was last year. In Rhode Island, a mask mandate took effect Monday for indoor spaces that can hold 250 people or more, such as larger retail stores and churches. In Boston, the city's new Democratic mayor announced to howls of protest and jeers that anyone entering a restaurant, bar, or indoor business will need to show proof of vaccination starting next month. Hubble Telescope's bigger, more powerful successor to SOAR. Cape Canaveral, Florida. The Hubble Space Telescope successor is a time-traveling wonder capable of peering back into within a hair's breadth of the dawn of the universe, and is finally on the brink of flight. It will be the biggest and most powerful astronomical observatory ever to leave the planet, elaborate in its design and ambitious in its scope. At a budget-busting $10 billion, it is the most expensive and also the trickiest by far to pull off. Set to soar after years of delay on Friday, the James Webb Space Telescope will seek out the faint, twinkling light from the first stars and galaxies, providing a glimpse into cosmic creation. Its infrared eyes will also stare down black holes and hunt for alien worlds, scouring the atmospheres of planets for water and other possible hints of life. That's why it's worth taking risks. That's why it's worth the agony and the sleepless nights, NASA's science mission chief, Thomas Zurbuchen, said in an interview with the Associated Press. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson said he's more nervous now than when he launched on Space Shuttle Columbia in 1986. There are over 300 things, any of which goes wrong, it is not a good day, Nelson told the AP. So the whole thing has got to work perfectly. The Webb telescope is so big that it had to be folded origami style to fit into the nose cone of the European Ariane rocket for a liftoff from the coast of French Guiana in South America. Its light-collecting mirror is the size of several parking spots, and its sunshade the size of a tennis court.
National Guard helping virus-sapped states and hospitals. The Associated Press. More U.S. states desperate to defend against COVID-19 are calling on the National Guard and other military personnel to assist virus-weary medical staffs at hospitals and other care centers. People who became sick after refusing to get vaccinated, overwhelming hospitals in certain states, especially in the Northeast and the upper Midwest, New York, meanwhile, announced a statewide indoor mask order effective Monday and lasting 5 weeks through the holiday season. We're entering a time of uncertainty, and we could either plateau here or our cases could get out of control, Governor Kathy Hochul warned Friday. In Michigan, Health Director Elizabeth Hertel was equally blunt. I want to be absolutely clear. You are risking serious illness, hospitalization, and even death without a vaccination. The 7-day rolling average for daily new cases in the U.S. rose over the past 2 weeks to 117,677 by Thursday, compared to 84,756 on November 25th, Thanksgiving Day, according to Johns Hopkins University. The number of people hospitalized with COVID-19 has soared to about 54,000 on average, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Meanwhile, the country is approaching a new milestone of 800,000 COVID-19 deaths. More than 200 million Americans, or about 60% of the population, are now fully vaccinated. In Maine, which hit a pandemic high this week, with nearly 400 COVID-19 patients in hospitals, as many as 75 members of the National Guard were being summoned to try to keep people out of critical care with monoclonal antibodies and to perform other non-clinical tasks. Choice school application period is now open. The choice school application period for Ector County ISD parents and students runs through January 15th. For high school students, there is no application deadline, as the three campuses are filled on a first-come, first-served basis. Parents can find information and the online application at www.ectorcountyisd.org. COVID in pregnancy with stillbirths, Associated Press. Pregnant women with COVID-19 face increased chances for stillbirths compared with uninfected women, and that risk spiked to 4 times higher after the Delta variant emerged, new government data show. The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention released a report Friday that examined 1.2 million deliveries in 736 hospitals nationwide for March 2020 through September 2021. Stillbirths were rare overall, totaling 8,154 among all deliveries. But the researchers found that for women with COVID-19, about 1 in 80 deliveries resulted in stillbirth. Among the uninfected, it was 1 in 155. Among those with COVID-19, stillbirths were more common in people with chronic high blood pressure and other complications, including those in intensive care or on breathing machines. These findings underscore the importance of COVID-19 prevention strategies, including vaccination before or during pregnancy. CDC researcher Carla DeSisto and co-authors said, "There's no information on how many had received COVID-19 shots, although the authors noted that the U.S. vaccination rate among pregnant people after Delta emerged this past summer was 30%. Pregnant people with COVID-19 are more likely than others to develop severe, even fatal illness, and they face increased risks for preterm birth and other complications. Previous studies on stillbirths and COVID-19 had mixed findings, but the report bolsters concerns among obstetricians and anecdotal data. While the absolute risk for stillbirth is low, anyone who is pregnant shouldn't underestimate the dangers of COVID-19, said Dr. Mark Turrentine, a professor at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. He helped write the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists' recommendations for COVID-19 vaccination in pregnancy. "What's really sad is we have 10 months of a vaccine that's been highly effective, and we just can't convince people to take advantage of this," Turrentine said. Some experts have speculated that the virus may cause inflammation in the placenta or other abnormalities that could harm the fetus. Dr. Joseph Biggio, a specialist in high-risk pregnancies at Ochsner Health in New Orleans, said the study doesn't prove that COVID-19 caused stillbirths. He said it's possible some women were so critically ill that physicians trying to keep them alive couldn't intervene on behalf of a fetus that they knew was in trouble. The researchers relied on medical records, and they noted that they were unable to determine if the COVID-19 diagnosis listed at the time of delivery represented current or past infections. Generally, stillbirths are more common among Black people, those who become pregnant over age 35, or those who smoke tobacco during pregnancy. The study didn't include pregnancy outcomes by race, an area the authors said they plan to investigate in future research because COVID-19 has disproportionately affected many racial and ethnic minority groups, putting them more at risk of getting sick and dying. Vitamins cause of reader's headache. To your good health for Thursday. Dear Dr. Roach, all my life I have had severe headaches almost daily. I have been to various doctors and none of the treatments, including medications, stress management, and identifying food triggers, was effective. Doctors told me to live with it. I have always taken vitamins. Last April, I missed my vitamins by accident, and that day I had no pain. The next day I skipped them, and again, no pain. I tried the vitamins again and had severe headaches. No doctor ever suggested vitamins could be the cause of my headache. To the millions of headache sufferers, try quitting vitamins. Dr. Roach writes, "Millions of people take vitamins in hopes of preventing disease. There are only a few instances when taking vitamins in people with no symptoms of deficiency has definitively been shown to be beneficial. One example would be pregnant women, where the B vitamin folic acid has been shown to reduce a type of birth defect, neural tube abnormalities. Vitamin D is beneficial in older people at risk for falls or with osteoporosis. Otherwise, the studies looking at taking vitamins have generally not shown a benefit. This is probably because most people involved in such studies generally have a healthy diet. It remains debated whether vitamin supplementation is beneficial in those with a not-so-healthy diet. They probably do. The harms of vitamins are small. I have seen a handful of cases of allergies, probably due to fillers or dyes, rather than the vitamins themselves, and headaches are well documented, particularly from vitamin A or niacin, especially at higher doses. Some people get upset stomach or an unusual taste. Given a probable lack of benefit, it might be worth stopping vitamins for possible side effects."
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, December 23rd. Friend's death cloaked in secrecy and silence. "Dear Abby, a dear friend of mine, Dirk, died by suicide a couple of years ago. We were very close when we were young, but saw each other only occasionally as adults. However, on the occasions we did get together, it was always felt like we picked up where we left off. I found out about my friend's death from a family member after I discovered his phone number was no longer working and his Facebook and Messenger accounts had been deleted. He had died a few months earlier. Dirk's family asked me not to tell anyone that the death was a suicide. They didn't want his memory to be about that final decision. Because there was no obituary in the newspaper, they didn't want one, it feels as though my friend has been erased with no trace. I'm still having a hard time with his death. I feel like I should put an in memoriam obituary in the paper. I also feel a need to talk about it with others, both for myself and as a warning to others. My mother thinks I should abide by the wishes of the family. What do you think? Signed, Missing My Friend in Ohio." Dear Missing, when someone takes their own life, there are usually a range of emotions experienced by the survivors. These can include shame, guilt, and anger. Fortunately, there are mental health programs that can help with these if the family is aware they are available. A call to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-8255, could guide them if they reach out. I sincerely hope you will listen to your mother and respect the wishes of the deceased's family, even though you do not agree. If you do what you're contemplating, it could cause the family even more pain. Dear Abby, our 26-year-old married son currently lives with us. His wife of 3 years, close in age, was raised in a different culture and has recently started living with her parents in a city 4 hours away. My son has a stable, well-paying job and cannot relocate. They talk on the phone many times a day and night, and both say their marriage is fine. She doesn't work and doesn't finish anything she starts. She contributes to her family's household by using the car and money our son provides. She says she became depressed when they lived in our town, but is happy with her parents and really doesn't see moving out. We feel she is immature, controlling, and taking advantage of our son. We have told him as much. He understands he has a situation, but seems too weak to change it. What more can we do? Signed, Flustered Parents in Texas. Dear parents, your son knows your opinion. You can and should do nothing more than you already have. because he and his wife say they are happy with the situation. Keep your mouths shut and refrain from stirring the pot. At some point, one of them will want to make changes, which may mean your son will have to relocate. But this is his problem and one he must resolve on his own.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.